Meeks, who will be presenting a very detailed technical topic. So there are probably too many people in the room here, honestly, you know. It's really not that interesting, okay? Hopefully the punchline at the end is that we can make it quicker, which is good, but some of the details are just distressing. So, you know, steel yourself. The other benefit is that, so the second slide is really important, actually, in the sequence. So I'll ramble for a while all the late people arrive. So, you know, OpenOffice slow bloated. You've seen this, you know, SoftMaker Google ad. You know, they're very kind to us, aren't they? You know, they have to sell their product, but there is some truth in it, you know, so we need to fix it. And often the problem is stated, you know, to me, because I'm a bit of a GNOME fan, in this way. GNUmeric starts up fully before OpenOffice can even get the splash screen on the screen, right? Or some equally friendly, you know, way of pointing this out. So, you know, there is a real problem, and we need to fix it. So most performance problems, I would argue, you know, unless you have a 286, are essentially algorithmic. You thrash the CPU when you shouldn't be doing it by using a silly algorithm, or you thrash the disk, and seeks are very expensive on the disk. Each takes 10 milliseconds, which means you can do, I'm not good at multiplying here, but only 100 in a second, right? So if you want a second delay, going and finding 100 files, or perhaps even 50, depending on your filing system, is a good way of wasting a second. Also, you know, excessive memory use. You know, you start making everything page when you have huge pieces of code, and you allocate a whole load of data that pushes other stuff out, and you have to block while memory becomes available, while the VM swaps stuff out. And yeah, of course, that's all synchronous. It's really difficult to do in the background. And excessive unshared memory use, there's some interesting bugs, actually, in Issuezilla from Largo, Florida, where they're running, you know, 100 user systems with 100 instances of OpenOffice, and the memory issues, you know, they turn into 400 megabyte processes after only a day of work. And that's quite a lot of memory if you have 100 people. And then, of course, you know, touching files you don't need to is just silly, causing lots of seek stuff. And, you know, of course, there are various other performance problems you can create. Obviously, sleep is one of them, you know. So you see Linux starting up, and it boots so slowly because it spends most of its time sleeping. IPC thrash, yeah, I mean, this is potential various other problems that are difficult to catch. What I'm going to show you are pictures I drew earlier. My understanding is not perfect. Your understanding may be better. Do tell me. And in some cases, these are a simplification, simply because the real truth is too ugly to draw in a simple picture. However, this is a CPU thrash chunk of problem, and this is what I've been looking at for a while. And linking on Linux is really unpleasant, and I'd just like to walk you through it. So in OpenOffice, we have 150 libraries, something like that, shared libraries. And each of these libraries has a whole load of symbols that need to be resolved. So you can think of a symbol as a function name, so something like RTL U*compare, for example, is a symbol. And, of course, when you want to actually run that method, you have to look up what is the value of the symbol, and you have to find it. And for various historical reasons, the way this is specified as having to happen is that you start with the first thing you linked, and you look in that. And then you look in the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing, all the way along this chain. And eventually, you find the symbol. And then you can call your function or whatever. Now, there are various problems with that. Obviously, 150 things is quite a large number, but the amount of logic you have to do to look up a symbol is also quite expensive, particularly because we have about 22 megabytes of symbol and relocation entries and hash tables that we have to traverse to actually resolve, you know, the symbol. Obviously, hopefully you won't look up all 22 megabytes. Maybe you only look up on average half of this, or perhaps less, you know, 8 megabytes. Either way, it's well outside the range of what you can fit in your cache. And in addition, of course, it's all hashed. So for example, let's look at this RTL U*compare. So we'll look in soffice.bin, and then we'll come along to libc. And we'll look in the symbol hash. And, you know, maybe it hashes to here. And the first thing you notice is this hash table is not very sparse. In fact, it's really quite crowded. It turns out that for every lookup you do on average, you have 1.2 hits. So you will almost certainly hit something the first look. So you know, so immediately you've accessed somewhere random in this large chunk of hash table, which is unlikely to be cached. You then go and look at a string somewhere else in this, you know, 22 megabytes of symbol information, which is, again, unlikely to be cached. And you then compare it with RTL useString compare. Hey, it doesn't match, you know? I mean, the chances of it matching are minimal. And then, you know, you have this other hit here, which, you know, which could also be that value. And so, you know, you go and do this lookup again, on average, 1.2 times per library. And so then, you know, you move on to the next library, which has essentially exactly the same problem. And so it goes on average, 75 times. So that would be fine if we had relatively few symbols. As it happens, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of symbols to do this with at startup alone. And, you know, people wonder, you know, so why is it like this? You know, why can't we, you know, immediately fix this? It seems totally broken to do this search. GCC has a whole class of pieces of code, and it lumps these together and calls them vague linkage. Vague linkage. What vague linkage means is that we're never quite sure what it's going to link to, which piece of code. So RTL useString compare is not a good example here, but an inline function, for example, can be emitted multiple times, you know, obviously, as it's inlined. And then it, you know, it can be somewhere else as well. And it's potentially possible that every module that uses that class, if it's described in a certain way, has a copy of that inline function in it. Or with templates, similarly, there's problems. But perhaps the most obvious and silly one is exceptions. And I have a drawing here. So we have lib-A and lib-B. Imaginative naming, I know. And, you know, lib-A has a piece of code in it that throws a foo exception. And lib-B has, you know, a little try statement that calls or may call that piece of code that throws a foo exception. This is all good. The problem is that there are several possible scenarios here. For example, lib-A might throw this exception, but it's never caught by anyone, right? So you have to have all the type information for that exception in this library, otherwise you can't throw it. You don't know that there's going to be someone else defining that type information. Of course, it can be caught in a totally different library that was not known at compile time, and it isn't linked to. Or we can check for it, but maybe no one ever threw it, right? So you see that in order to specify these exceptions, you have to have bits of information in both lib-A and lib-B. Now, in the bad old days, and I think I have a slide of the bad old days. Okay, right, so there they are. You see, I'm playing with transitions. I'll tell you about the bad old days and the good old days later. Is that concept relatively clear, that you have to have the type information in both places? Good. So here is the real cost of linking. I walked you through it in a waffly way earlier. This is slightly more succinct. This is all pinched from Ulrich Drepper's excellent paper, which I encourage you to read after you've read my mediocre paper on the same topic. The number of relocations is what really kills us. And it turns out the function relocations, essentially what happens when you call a function call like RTL useString compare, can be done lazily. So you can wait until the function is called and then do the relocation. Unfortunately, data relocations have to be done before you can run any code in the shared library. And the reason is this, that the first piece of code could load a chunk of that data and then do something with it. And you have no way of trapping that and knowing about that. Well, okay, so there are some ways, and we'll look at that later. So, you know, this is not looking good, R times N times log S. And in fact, it gets a whole lot worse with C++ than it appears to look. Of course, you can reduce the number of symbols, which is nice, because the code size shrinks substantially. And you know, our cache performance improves and so on and so on. But it really doesn't actually accelerate startup linking a whole lot because there's a log in there, right? So let me tell you how the idle linking happens. It's pretty simple. The first thing you have to realize is all this code is relocatable. So it could be anywhere in memory. So, you know, substantially we can't pre-link any of this stuff because we don't know where the library is going to be. So the code at the bottom here will, you go call, instead of, I suppose, the function directly, it will call into the PLT, procedure lookup table, I guess. And this is a shared piece of code that's used by every process that runs this code. That then, this green thing here, loads a piece of data out of the global object table, which is the function pointer itself. Okay. and it then goes and calls that, which is what you'd expect. Now, the first time it's called, the function pointer in here actually points back into the PLT. Okay? And there's a contorted piece of logic then that occurs such that that actually ends up then executing a fix-up routine that then fixes up this little slot in here and then actually runs it. So subsequently, on the second call, you call directly into the PLT, which loads the thing out of the global object table, the function pointer, and then calls it. Okay? So maybe you never realized that when you called a function, there was something this slow going on. But actually, it's true, and you never notice it, because it's a very distributed effect. So that's the things you can do idly. Of course, there are a lot of things that have to be done, as I was saying earlier, before DLOpen completes. And you know, I've been doing some research on what those things are and how we can try and help it. And this is just some data from three libraries here, libsvx, the writer library, and VCL, to see how these named relocations break down. And perhaps I didn't stress that earlier. There are really two types of relocation: named relocations that have to do this very long name search that's very expensive, and unnamed relocations, which are really cheap. An unnamed relocation would essentially just adjust a number, right? So your library can be relocated anywhere in memory, and an unnamed relocation will just take account of that and adjust an integer. It's really, really fast, and you can do them linearly, and they're almost free. The real slowness is the named relocations. Anyway, so this is just looking at named relocations. And as you can see, libsvx has 54,000 of them. Libstarwrite has 28,000 of them. It turns out that these are not as bad as all that often, because many times they're the same pointer, or the same name, rather. And the way the linker orders those, if you use the right flags, is that the same name will all be next to each other, and we have a one-item cache, and go, it's the same name. Just fix it up with the same value. So say you have two classes that both inherit from VCL window, assuming that has virtual methods, does it? Excellent. Quite a lot of them, right? So both these classes will have vtables. Both of those will include pointers, relocations, named relocations, to all those VCL methods that are most likely in another shared library. And so it's fine. Doing all of that work, relocating them, it costs as much as one derived class from a VCL window. Okay, so it's fine. You have these two classes, and the cost is as if it were one, which is good until you split it into two libraries, because then you can't reuse this cache at all. So in fact, that substantially doubles the amount of relocation you have to do and gives you almost no relocation win, typically. Anyhow, so let's just look at a vtable. A vtable looks like this. It has some funky name mangling here. If you like name mangling, you'll notice I put an 8 there when there should be a 3. I apologize. And the vtable is essentially just a whole load of, pointers, I guess. And typically, there's a 50-50 split. Half of them are inherited from a parent, and typically that would be in another shared library, all things being equal. And then typically, half of them refer to code that is overwhelmingly likely to be in that library itself, in the actual implementation that is declaring its class. Now, the first thing you might think is, wouldn't it be great if we could just link these guys directly so that we don't have to do a named lookup, right? I mean, we know the answer already. We have the code in here. And you know, that's a good idea. By default, nothing like that happens at all. All of these names are looked up, even for code that we know at link time we define. And the reason for that is that ELF has this wonderful interposing thing. Maybe you've used LD preload. Has anyone used LD preload hacks? You know, so that you can override fprintf, for example, with a little stub library that happens in advance. And of course, for the vague linkage reasons that I explained earlier. So there's really no separation between those things that are likely to be overloaded in LD preload hack, and I've never seen any C++ LD preload hacks. I don't know, maybe other people have, but I think they're almost non-existent. And so there's no distinction between the vague linkage things that we really need to work and do this slow traversal, and things that just makes no sense to have vague linkage in. I mean, if this is a virtual method, it doesn't matter. Hopefully all virtual method implementations, if there are several, will do the same thing. Otherwise, something went badly wrong anyway. So So some people talk to and say, you know, but what about this visibility markup? Isn't it wonderful? You know, we can dramatically reduce the amount of problems that we have. And you know, this is partly true. However, many of the problems were foisted on us in the first place by making this vague linkage stuff actually bite us. So in the bad old days, there was much less vague linkage. Exceptions could be compared by string compares, which sounds slow, right? But the net effect of that was that you didn't need to resolve that exception to one unique value. So you could do an internal relocation, and when you threw your exception, you catch it because there was a string compare. Now, as everyone knows, string compares can be slow. So it was decided that as a performance optimization, we should do pointer compares instead, which sounds like a win, right? Every time. Okay, well, of course, the only problem is that in order to get the pointers to match, you then have to do this incredibly expensive exercise as you DL open every library to ensure that all of those exception names resolve to exactly the same pointer value. So actually, the net effect on performance is dire. It makes it very substantially slower. Although, in certain circumstances, obviously, if you're creating a small application, you know, you're just linking everything into one binary, of course, there is a measurable performance improvement. Okay, so in the bad old days, we would resolve all these guys here in yellow internally. So they would result in no named lookups whatsoever, which was excellent. But of course, you'd still need to look up, you know, the other half of every V table, which is the external methods. So, you know, the brave new world arrived, and suddenly we got at least twice as slow, in fact, probably worse because of various other effects. And so we then had to spend, you know, absolutely ages doing all this visibility markup, you know, manual work, touching every line of the code. And at the end of it, we're nearly back to where we were in the beginning, right? So there's a definite performance improvement to visibility markup, but unfortunately, it's replacing one that was taken away from us. So, you know, it's a lot of work. And you talk to the compiler guys, and they're busy people. But they have all these unhelpful suggestions, like using link maps and claiming the problem isn't there, you know, and this sort of thing. And as we all know, maintaining link maps is a disaster area and not portable, you know, across even versions of GCC. So, you know, it's pretty silly. So that's the background of the problem. And here are some of the things that I've done to, you know, at least investigate fixing it in various ways. So the first attempt was to replace the old B-symbolic support. So actually, if we go back to this slide, the process of resolving all these internally is done by a flag called minus B-symbolic in the compiler. So let me, and it turns out there's this beautiful effect. All of the things that are vague linkage related are tagged with this weak symbol flag, right? So that we can tell when we look at the symbol, this is important for vague linkage, this isn't. Brilliant. So with a tiny hack to the linker, like, I don't know, 10 lines, something like this, we could get 50% improvement, right? So that would bring us back to the situation where all of this stuff was resolved internally. Here, really nice, right? Unfortunately, owing to another pending optimization, which is coming, this weak symbol tagging is going to disappear pretty soon. So this is actually not a useful thing to do. So on the one hand, there's another optimization, which is good. You know, it's coming our way. It's called COMDAT. But on the other hand, it throws away a nice heuristic we can use to improve, you know, quite substantially with almost no effort. So that's a shame. And what the COMDAT work does is that I've already talked about situations in which, you know, you may emit multiple exception information. What the COMDAT stuff does by removing the weak symbol is and tagging those things in a certain way means that if a library depends on another library and they both define this exception type information, then we throw away the child's exception information. So this shrinks code size, and it's really nice. I mean, it's a really good win. So instead of having, you know, 100 copies of IO exception or whatever type information lying around the code, we just have normally one. You know, in every real situation, you'd only have one, which is cool. But unfortunately, it's a bit of a pain with the B-symbolic hack. So there's some annoyances here as well. If you think about the V table, say you DL open VCL, it fixes up all the VCL V tables. So the window V table is all fixed up. It has all these beautiful function pointers in it, ready to use. You then DL open SVX that uses VCL, and we go and look up all of those names again, from scratch. And we know already that they're already fixed up in DCL. Perfect. We could just copy them, right? If we could hook that. Okay. Well, I showed you this earlier. 80 to 90% of these relocations are just these VTable relocations. Other people's solutions have to be seen to be believed, really. So the simple one is Firefox. You know, you just massively statically link absolutely everything into one binary, and you resolve all these problems as you do that link. And, you know, so you have this huge binary that you load, including virtually everything, and it starts up relatively quickly. Of course, you know, you still have the problem when you pull a plugin in that you have to do the plugin linking. KDE has this solution as well called KDE Init. And this is, you know, this is a hack, but it works quite well for them. And essentially, they have all their libraries, you know, their big looking ugly libraries with lots of relocations in them. And they load them all into this thing called KDE Init, which they run as you log into your desktop. So the first time you log in, there is, you know, a second of linking relocation goes on. And that's fine. Subsequently, then, you link every application as a shared library. And instead of running the application, you have a little shell script that tells KDE Init, go fork, and then deal open this library, then run an entry point in it. So, you know, it works, right? I mean, let's face it, it works quite well. The problem is it's just not reusable by anyone else. You know, this hack only works if you have lots of programs sharing the same infrastructure that's already in place. Of course, the downsides are every process is called KDE Init, you know, and you know, it's not the most elegant thing in terms of what people expect, debugging and so on. So those are two solutions. Prelink is also held up to be another solution. If you don't know what Prelink does, Prelink attempts to solve these problems by, in advance, doing all of this linking and saving the information in the actual binary itself. And of course, you know, that creates new binaries or rewrites existing ones. It's not available on every system. I really don't like it because I think it's a hack. And you know, if we can avoid having to pre-link things, that'll be a big win. The other problem with pre-linking is that it doesn't work for DL open, and many components in OpenOffice are pulled in dynamically as they're needed, as they should be. And pre-link really only works for a binary and all the libraries that it can be seen to pull in to start with. And Quelon has some hacks. We have Quelon sitting here somewhere, very quietly and thinly. Yeah, you see, there he is. Yeah, excellent. Oh, you are standing up. Never mind. Yes. Sorry, dude. So just link more libraries with it that we think we're going to need, and then you can pre-link it and get a nice WIMP. And you know, you browse and Google on the web, and there's some wonderful people in Sun who came up with this cool thing with shared memory and, you know, a central system caching relocation daemon and I don't know, all this sort of stuff, which it turned out actually didn't really give you much of a win for, you know, a very complicated and potentially problematic system. So, potential better solutions. Breaking or extending ELF. So, in many ways, if we can get these symbols that we know are not vague and directly link to the library that we know they're in, then, you know, that we discovered they were in at link time, then we can do a lot better. And, you know, that would remove the number of libraries factor out of the linking cost, which is brilliant because it means we can fragment OpenOffice into, you know, 100 million one-line pieces of C++, right? Every single object module could be a shared library, you know. This would be a win, right? So that would be nice. I must say, I haven't really investigated this option at all. I only thought about it, you know, a few days back as a serious contender, so I've done no work on that. You are doing that. Cool, excellent. So this is the way to go, clearly. I just never knew. Right, and there'll be ELF extensions that'll be published to store that information and... Okay, it's in that role. Okay. I should get an open Solaris machine or something. Be direct. Okay, cool. Well, you know, it seems the rest of my slides, you know, are pretty pointless, but let me, you know, explain some of the other ideas that I had. So if you're prepared for your virtual functions not to compare equal, given that they point to the same function, and to be honest, I don't know how many people actually go around comparing their virtual functions to check that, you know, they are what they thought they are, across shared libraries, then we can do a number of things. One is that we could break the C++ ABI, in fact, to make some of these methods I discussed more efficient. One of them is to just add VLT stubs. So The problem with the PLT stub that I showed you earlier here, let me go back to my pretty picture. I can use page up, right? This one. Okay. So all of this, you know, this diagram looks very nice, right? It's beautiful. You would think that you'd be able to stick a PLT reference, you know, pointed to this guy in your vtable, and everything would be beautiful, right? All of this relocation thing would happen for you. It would be a simple hack. And, you know, it actually worked for me, you know, until I started Kamal's StarOffice. And the problem is, the problem is quite simple, right? This library here could be relocated anywhere in memory. And so what we have is a frame pointer. If you're a Gentoo user, you've probably used minus F omit frame pointer because you think it speeds your program up, right? Which is fine. Here's what it does. There's a register, EBX, which is typically clobbered, and it points to, hopefully, the beginning here, right? So when your code wants to load a global variable, or rather a local variable, a piece of instance data, it uses an offset from this, what's called the frame pointer, right? EBX. And when you call into this code, under most circumstances, it will work out what the instruction pointer is of the code that's actually running inside the method, and from that calculate what frame it's in. So it says, where am I, first of all, and then it can start to use data. That's the frame pointer. The problem is that these PLT entries are only ever called from this code that has this frame pointer set up, right? Now, a virtual function table can be called from anywhere, right? Such as, for example, this guy here. And he will have a very different EBX setup if he even has one at all, actually. And so, of course, you then start looking in, you know, this bit of memory, looking for something that actually lives here, and the whole thing goes extremely pear-shaped. As long as you have a complicated setup and not my simple test. So essentially, you need then something more clever to get away with that. And one of them is VLT stubs, I think, are probably quite a nice thing. And what that would allow you to do is essentially hook into a piece of code that set up an index that said where you were in the virtual table. So with that index and the this pointer, you can work out where your function pointer actually is in the vtable, right? So just with that little hook, we can then effectively relocate that method idly as we're running. Of course, having an index and knowing where your virtual table starts is, you know, obviously a necessary prerequisite, but you then also have to have all the link data in some form that you can reuse to actually do that idle linking. So you need a sort of class description structure that is in addition to all the type information. Of course, that can be shared across processes, but, you know, it requires standardizing it and blah, 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 and you have to hack glibc and so on and so on. It's quite involved. Another little hack that is quite nice, and there's just a tiny tool called obj-prelink2, does something slightly more evil. And that essentially uses the PLT method that I was describing earlier that I tried and failed. But it then rewrites each of those PLT entries to not require a frame pointer. So essentially, they're relocated as you page the thing in. And that works really well, in fact. You know, it gives you the speed up you expect, you know, about 50%, right? I mean, 50% is the upper bound of what you can get from any of these techniques, the simple ones. Of course, with the class description structure, I don't know if I thought I wrote another slide. Okay, in more detail. Here's the more detail. So the PLT entries are okay, so I've told you this virtually already. The problem with using the PLT entry hack is that you're always chaining via the PLT, right? So in the current world we have this huge performance penalty when we're relocating the library. But every virtual method you call is extremely cheap because you load the function pointer and you call essentially directly into the code. It's actually cheaper to then call a virtual function pointer than actually to call a standard method via the PLT, right? You know, adding an extra level of indirection can be painful for people who, you know, like to think performance lies in, you know, each function call being faster. So the other issue is that once you start relocating the PLT and making it not require a frame pointer, then this can't be shared between processes. So for libsvx, for example, this would add 260k of unshared memory. So it moves this memory from being able to be shared to not being able to be shared. course, this doesn't matter for OpenOffice at all because there's only one process, right? But it would just be much less reusable. And so it goes. So anyway, this object pre-link work is done. Have I turned this off accidentally? Hello? No. This work's done. You know, it exists. It's quite neat. It gives you, you know, up to a 50% speed up. And that's quite nice. I think a more beautiful solution specific to C++ is to use VLT entries. And so if your stub pushes this index and changes to this fixup routine, you can find the vtable, as I said earlier, and you require this parallel description. Once you have that parallel description, I think you'd need to do almost no name lookups at all. So you get effectively almost 100% speed improvement, which is nice. Because essentially, all of the methods that you implement, that's half of them, in this current object file, you can resolve at link time. So you're not doing those anyway. And in addition, your parent methods were similarly resolved by the parent at link time. So if you can copy those in from someone else, and you've already resolved yours, you have to do no named relocation processing at all. And so this is really quite a simple and an elegant solution for fixing that. So are there any questions before I move on to the more lighthearted part of the less intense piece that, you know, sort of hopefully softens you up? Good, excellent. It was that boring, huh? Excellent. Okay, so there's some Jody Goldberg. Here you are. That's a question to which I do not know the answer. Matthias Hutch.
Well, I looked into some of the libraries and the change mm-hmm. was one has weren't so long. There's some link up in the
okay.
So in like 5 entries, I think this amounts to the 1.2
on average, yeah. Right. Of course, yeah. So,
in terms of, if you've got 150 libraries there, you want to have mostly no lookups.
Of course, but I mean, you know, there's always a trade-off here, you know, so clearly it's like a seek, you know, one of these cache misses, like a disk seek or something, you know, and if you enlarge your hash table, you know, you're going to get more cache problems as you go along. So, you know, maybe it's worth trying, I'm sure, but whether you get a substantial win or not, I don't know. We should look at it. Anything else? Good. Okay. Well, here we go then. So as I was saying earlier, seeks are really expensive. You can do 100 in a second. So there have been some quite comic things in the past. So for example, PSPrint, this is, you know, until quite recently in OpenOffice 2.0, was statting every single font on startup, just, you know, to find out what time it was changed. We would then write that timestamp to a cache file. You know, sounds good. Every startup this is. And this timestamp was never used, it turns out. You know, when we subsequently reread the cache file, and let's not go into why you might want to write and read your cache in the same startup, but it wasn't actually used. So, you know, removing this was really, you know, a trivial win, a nice speed up, obviously, and good news. The new UI design, on the other hand, you know, very beautiful, very flexible, except for the accelerator settings, which involves cutting and pasting virtually all accelerators and then changing them per language, which is not good. But beyond that, we have about 300 files to describe the OpenOffice user interface. So in theory, you know, if we turned all the toolbars on and we're starting four components at once, we can do a multiplication by 10 milliseconds, we get 3 seconds to load the UI. And there's nothing you can do about it. If you have to touch those files, that's how long it's going to take a cold start, right? And there's no way you can fix it. So, you know, luckily we only load, you know, several tens of these on startup. So, you know, maybe that's only half a second. Similarly, caching to improve performance. You know, so the registry is cached, and it's, you know, it's great to have a cache to avoid parsing it, but it's in scattered files. Again, instead of aggregating these into a single file that you can seek to and read, you know, relatively expensive, they're all scattered in several files. And it turns out that, you know, in GNOME, we switched to using SVG icons at one stage, and there was, you know, all these concerns about performance and parsing XML and doing all this floating point arithmetic to render them and blah and blah, okay? your programmers, right? You know that those things are expensive. Well, it turns out that in actual fact, in contrast, you know, in comparison with just uncompressing a ping, which is relatively simple integer, you know, stuff, there's no performance impact to loading an SVG icon that's measurable and rendering it using, you know, like weird elliptical gradient stuff, right? So just to give you an idea, you know, your processor is blindingly fast and your disk is like a glorified tape drive, okay? So, no, seriously, you know, it is. So you need to don't choke your CPU by spreading your files everywhere. So similarly, images, cached, brilliant, in scattered files again. So we have one nice big file, and we split that out into eight other separate files that we then go and load every time we start. You know, and we turn 4.5 meg of zip file we could have read into 1 meg of uncompressed scattered cache. So these things here that I say to you are really about kernel hackers being lame, right? Many of these problems with seeking are, I would argue, are not the application developer's fault, right? I mean, the working set of OpenOffice is fairly clear. It should be easy for the operating system to anticipate what we need, reorder it on disk, and so on and so on. And Intel doing some cool work to, you know, make that a reality in the kernel. And Windows, of course, does this, as I'll, you know, show in a subsequent slide. But the kernel hackers don't know what I've just told you about rendering SVG. They don't understand that a seek is staggeringly, gobsmackingly expensive, because they spend the whole time focusing on removing one clock cycle from a system call, right? Or one specific system call, even better, you know? And so, you know, they have this really micro view. So when they look at OpenOffice and they notice that low, it is really slow to start, the first thing they do is run strace, right? And so, you know, so they start looking at our file I/O. Turns out the kernel has a very simple way of detecting whether a file is being used sequentially or whether it's being used in a random access sort of fashion. And what do they do? Well, if you go seeking all over the place, clearly you're using it in a random access sort of fashion, right? Whereas if you're doing concurrent reads, you're using it in a linear fashion, right? We're just going to preload really aggressively for you. It's a pretty simple heuristic, but you know it works for the vast majority of cases, except with OpenOffice, of course, where between every read, we like to do at least two seeks, often up to five. You know, so this doesn't help. But of course, this doesn't really give you a very big win, right? The real win is persuading the kernel hacker that actually the problem is his, okay? So, you know, and there's other similar kernel abuse. You know, they'll look at this guy here. I think this is reading images.zip, you know, reading 2 bytes at a time. You know, I only cut and pasted, you know, 10 lines out of the, you know, 5,000 or whatever reading that, okay? But each of these syscalls has, you know, a measurable and non-zero overhead, you know. So this is my totally unfair picture. I understand that now the picture is very different. So it's an anachronism. But here's my take on it. It's twice as quick to start on Windows, the same code. So, you know, Windows is doing a lot better job, particularly in I/O scheduling, but also in linking. This is 112 on Windows, 114 on Linux. I guess it's not really a totally fair comparison, but you know, you would think that 114 would be faster than 112. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. But on the same system. So I would argue that this is nothing to do with OpenOffice, right? Okay, it's not our fault. This is the good news from this picture: that the same code running on two platforms is, you know, is substantially faster on Windows. So we need to take this message to kernel hackers. And one thing I'd like to encourage you to do if you are a young, intelligent, unmarried, you know, articulate, amusing person is to go to hacker conferences and, you know, and tell these people. There should be someone at Ottawa Linux Symposium every year and, you know, OOCon or various other OzCon things saying, the Linux kernel sucks, you know? And you only have to say it to enough people enough times and they will fix it, right? Because they get really needled by that. You know, show them this graph repeatedly, you know? Look, same thing, still, you know. Okay, so bloatedness. Bloatedness is another thing, right? So, you know, allocating, you know, a megabyte of memory may seem to be a relatively cheap operation, and it's cheap until your memory is full of other stuff, right, that you want to keep. And then it becomes a really, really expensive operation while there's this game of Tetris the kernel plays to try and put a whole load of pages from somewhere onto disk and scatter gather and, you know, all sorts of good things, which takes forever. So reducing the memory footprint is just a really good idea for performance. And so, you know, there's some work that Intel did, actually, on reducing MySpell footprint. I think we went from 3.5 meg to 1 meg of unshared memory. And 1 meg of shared memory. So we just essentially memory map the dictionary in, and then we have a much more efficient hash that is simpler, I guess. And of course, in Largo's case, you know, we have 1 meg shared, so, you know, 1 meg for the whole machine, 100 users. And then, you know, we've gone from 3.5 meg to 1 meg, so it's 2.5 meg per user, so we saved them, you know, 250 meg on their machine. Okay, is that right? Definitely. So another thing that I noticed just as I was typing this talk earlier, and I thought I just ought to publicly embarrass people about, is that types to RDB between OpenOffice 1.1 and 2.0 went from 3.5 megabytes to 6.1 megabytes. It's memory mapped, so it's shared among all these 100 users, but for my single user laptop here, it's chewing, you know, a good chunk of this, I would bet. You know, a good chunk of 6 meg. And so I thought to myself, what is in that file? Let me show you. This is a header, right? It's fine to have loads of zeros in a header, okay? You know, that's normal. You know, look at any Microsoft Word document. You know, it's full of zeros, right? So, you know, it's a big file, right? It's 6 meg. You'll notice there's a recurring pattern as I scroll down here, you know, but let me scroll more aggressively. Maybe the top of the file is different to the middle of the file, you know? Or towards the end of the file, you know? I mean, anywhere here, yeah? And, you know, zeros need a home, okay? You know, they've got to go somewhere, right? You know, take pity on the zeros. But, you know, not my memory, okay? So there's probably some brilliant binary compatibility argument for this. Like, you know, we did this 100 years ago and our type database has to be exactly the same. But, you know, at least allow us to... What's that, Kai?
Only 10 years ago.
Only 10 years ago, right. And we're, yeah, still compatible. And, of course, 10 years ago, this would have been even more appreciated in the memory footprint they had then. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't understand anything about it, but it didn't look good to me. Images.zip, okay? So I was talking about this 4.5 meg of images.zip. So it turns out, you know, this is really lots better than the 1.1 resource format. You know, for a start, you have to say this is a massive improvement on scattering and duplicating the icons over every resource. Of course, it's excellent. But unfortunately, this zip file is twice as big as it needs to be because it stores all the accessible icons in there that are never used unless you have accessibility turned on. So it's already twice as big as it needs to be. Okay. Now, we don't read all of it into memory. I think we just read 500K of directory describing where all these little files are and the timestamps on startup. And I believe then we compare those timestamps to the timestamps in the cache file individually, although it's not clear to me how you can update the whole zip file or a file in the zip file without updating its single timestamp. I don't understand why we read the directory, but that seems curious to me, since we have this separate cache anyway. And this is fixed in, there's an icon theming child workspace, and we're still waiting for the specification to be fully comprehended by the QA team. So, you know, this could take a little while, turns out. So, you know, these are pretty comic, and, you know, there's some easy fixes here, which is good, right? So, you know, some people think that, you know, you should climb mountains because they're there, right? But piling mountains of code up, you know, just because you can is not so wonderful. So, you know, just a simple strace showed you that the database component was being loaded to do some file type detection on startup every time, even if you're running writer. You know, and again, a trivial fix, just a simple logic change. To my shame, the VFS, the GNOME VFS was being loaded, initializing the orb, you know, doing this vast scad of pulling in all these extraneous libraries on startup, again, you know, to try and resolve a URI scheme that's not in use these days anyway. You know. So this is a simple fix. One of the things that would be really nice for performance, ensuring that we don't regress, is to be able to have an assertion in there that says, this code should never be used during startup, crash if it is, right? Then you pretty soon find if it is, right? And, you know, just looking at the strace only a few minutes ago of my build that I thought this bug had been fixed in and the child workspace was merged upstream and blah and blah. Yeah, well, I was just looking at my strace in M129 and it was there again. So I don't know, you know, what happened, but it would be nice to ensure that, you know.
It doesn't survive initialization from a different thread.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why
oh, really? Have you filed an issue? Okay, well, I should have seen that, I guess. I didn't see that. I'll fix that. Good. So libAV Media, again, I mean, you know, a massive improvement, libAV Media, I'm sure, you know, et cetera. But, you know, why are we loading this on startup? You know, there's no AV stuff happening there. And, you know, and you can look at the VCL audio stuff, again, directly linked in, sound file, port audio, you know, the list goes on. It shouldn't really be in this huge list of libraries we have to traverse one by one, because every library you add there slows down the linking really noticeably. You know, I suppose with 150 libraries, one extra is nearly a percent slower. Java everywhere, right. So on startup, we load libjvm access, libjava framework, and this, I don't know what it does, with a funny name. And, you know, what are they doing? Well, you know, there's some VCL hooks for Java and various things that might need to be initialized, but do we really need to, you know, do we really need to have them mapped into core, being touched, you know, being touched every time we go down this link path? Probably not. So, you know, there are things we can remove, and then there are things that are just way small. I mean, you know, it turns out that the shared library loader itself is a shared library, right, that you load. And it's only, you know, I mean, of course, you know, this is a beauty of abstraction, right, you know? Yeah, absolutely. It's a 25K of shared library. You know, fairly few libraries are smaller than that, but, you know, it has a perceptible performance and penalty. Each of these is a percent. So, you know, if we knock 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 libraries into, you know, one, you know, we get a 6% performance improvement. This is, you know, not to be sniffed at. It is on the list to do. Cool. So, I mean, I hate to do it, right? Because this is beautiful. You know, having each piece of code, you know, modularized and whatever. Okay, maybe it's unnecessary too. But it, you know, conceptually, it's a nice idea. And, you know, it would be nice if the linker could cope with it and we wouldn't have to, you know, fiddle endlessly. So, I think that's about it. Yeah, the linking situation is a disaster for large scale C++, you know, and there's lots of hackish solutions that are really short term. But we need a better solution. And it seems like this B-Direct thing, I'll, you know, investigate that and have a look at it. But, you know, there's an investment problem, which is that in order to implement this, you have to, you know, understand glibc and probably the linker as well, binutils, and also quite likely a large chunk of GCC. And, you know, I'm just up to speed on binutils and GCC, and I've read some of the linker, but then you have to prototype it as well, and fiddling with your linker is, you know, not an easy thing, and so it goes on. So, there's some work there. Virtually everything I've said, and a little bit more in terms of some other crazy ideas for accelerating this, are in that document there. Components, as we saw at the end, are not 100% wonderful, and there's still lots of sillies out there that you can catch, right? Fire your strace up, have a look, you know, get involved. It should be easy. And, you know, it's the problem is that sillies tend to creep in quite easily again. So I'd really argue that we need to have a hard, you know, good way of catching these regressions that works well. So thank you for your patience and, you know, strength. Are there any questions? Mr. Goldberg. Yeah. So there are various things that do that. You know, there's ways to advise the kernel that you're going to load stuff. You know, you're going to want the whole lot of it. The problem with those kernel APIs is typically this. You have to run them on a file handle. And this is already half the problem, that you have to read the directory synchronously. You then open the file synchronously. And then you can say, oh, by the way, I want the whole contents asynchronously. You know, and preferably when, you know. And you have to memory map it. So API-wise, this is not the optimal API for accelerating, you know, file I/O, really. In fact, it's pretty useless, especially for small files, small scattered files, because you do most of the work before you tell the kernel you want it to do the work. So, yeah, the APIs are there, and indeed, the dynamic linker now, I think, is saying we want the whole library pulled in just when the library's open. So, you know, there is improvement in the kernel with regard to paging that stuff in. That was on the slide that said none of this is really important as well. So, you know, I don't think it probably has a measurable impact having those seeks in there. But the kernel people get upset about it. So, yeah. Kai, you had a...
Just, Yes, okay, so the visibility feature, yeah, substantially has a similar effect to be symbolic. Of course, anything that's part of your API doesn't in fact get internally bound, right? So if the vast majority of your library is implementing an API, then in fact it's worse than be symbolic already, because you know the methods you implement yourself are not bound in advance, okay? So you know it's already worse than be symbolic at its very best, and you know it's just a shame. But yeah, certainly it improves the current situation where we don't have be symbolic and we don't have markup. So you know if you're a beginner programmer who's very careful and can understand a problem and has some hours to spend, you know, come and see Matthias Hutch, and he will, you know, point you to Star Basic or something that, you know, with, you know, 15 or 20 very careful hours of work, you know, can be marked up, and that will reduce, you know, the symbol count and improve the picture slightly. Yeah. So, you know, there's a chunk of work there. That's interesting. Thanks, Kai. Anyone else? Good. Well, thank you again. Excellent.